Hey, Colin here. We just launched our Patreon, so if you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/Colin Stuckert. That's patreon.com/ColinStuckert. We will have exclusive updates coming. It will also give us more opportunities to invest more in the show and release more shows. Some other bonuses with the different tiers. Check it out over at patreon.com, and thank you for your support. Another way that you can support the show is you can head over to Wild Foods and use code AMPODCAST12 for 12% off your entire order of real food, superfood, supplements, and ingredients. These are products that I've been using myself in my daily life for years. I recommend checking out our fish oil and our collagen, and also make sure you check out the Co-Tropic. It's one of my favorite products. Cocoa, mushrooms, delicious. Head over to wildfoods.co and use AMPODCAST12 for 12% off your entire order.
I don't know about you, but a lot of my clients tell me, I need carbs, I need carbs, I need carbs. It's not that they need it, it's they want it and they're addicted to it.
Kate, welcome to the show.
Hi, Colin. Thank you for having me. Very thankful to be here. I'm a nutrition coach. I love helping people with that. I call myself a nutrition coach because I believe nutrition is our biggest tool. And I believe that this is the thing that we really have control over the most. I'm a big believer in movement as well, which is good for our heart health, but nutrition covers a lot more than that. So I like to call myself a nutrition coach.
So how'd you get into all this? Was it a typical, like, standard American diet, got health issues, then I went to the complete other extreme and became a coach, because that's what I hear all the time. So if that's not your story, that's fine. What got you into all this?
That's definitely my story in a nutshell. But I've always been into health and nutrition and all of that, because I went to school for exercise science, loved it. My ex-husband was a professional boxer, you know, so I've always been into the nutrition. But when my health really, you know, when I really started opening my eyes, that my health wasn't the greatest. And when I started really digging into that, that's when I realized, okay, I don't eat like most, you know, like I should. And it was the standard American diet, but it was a little healthier than that. So when I started really diving into it, I was like, wow, we don't know a lot of stuff.
Yep.
And I started using myself as the guinea pig.
So what were some of the big aha moments, the early ones? You know, like, was there a specific food you got rid of that you felt better? And you're like, well, wait a second, the experts told me to eat this and then I took it out. Maybe the experts aren't right. Like, what? Because I had my aha moment. It seems like everybody has it. What was that specific one for you?
My specific one was definitely meat. I didn't eat meat. I was more vegetarian. Okay. Yep. And then I went vegetarian keto.
Yep.
And then I went all carnivore. Mm. I realized, you know, that that was the biggest for me. It was because of being a nutrition coach, I noticed some of my clients that were adhering. As we know, as coaches, we don't always have that 100% people jumping in, doing what we want them to be consistent. And there were just a handful of people that I knew were being consistent and they were not getting 100% better. And so that actually made me look within myself as well. And then I realized, okay, a lot of these guys are not eating enough protein. Even though I did vegetarian keto properly and made sure I got enough protein for what I did, because I was always been an athlete, I realized, well, maybe they're not getting enough. So I ended up putting them on carnivore and they healed 100%. I was like, okay, well, there's something here that I need to be doing. And then when I did that, that was a big aha for me. I said, okay, well, I definitely wasn't healed 100%. There were still some things that were lingering that I considered normal. And I think we all do that. We think, oh, that headache's normal. That gas and bloating's normal. Yep. That, you know, whatever the issue is normal. And it's not. We're not supposed to feel anything.
Yeah, that's very true. So you actually put clients on before you were even doing it yourself?
Yeah, which is very unusual for me.
Well, that's unusual for any human to...
Yes.
Because most coaches are like, this is what I do. You should do this. And so that's a very telling that you cared for your clients enough to do that. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
And a lot of people, especially my daughter, because I put her on it, she's 30 years old. She had diverticulitis and I told her to do it. And that's very telling for her too, because she said, well, you don't eat meat. So it must be, and I was doing like eight months of research before I even put my clients on it, before I even committed to doing it. So, you know, even though I ate vegetarian, not everybody that I worked with ate vegetarian.
Yeah.
I taught them how to eat whatever lifestyle they wanted to the right way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. You mentioned at the beginning of the show that you did some crazy bike ride. And so now you're out there trying to promote more of a ancestral meat-based. I mean, I'm hesitant to call it carnivore nowadays because There's a little bit of negative branding comes with that. And I don't know if that, if carnivore is going to become the next keto or if it's going to be like a, I'm calling it like a ancestrally appropriate animal-based way of eating. I got to figure out how to make an acronym out of that or something. But that's that's basically what it is. And it really is. Even if it's 80% carnivore, a lot of people are like, oh, well, that's not carnivore. So you have this, that diet dogma, that those bad ideas, right? But to me, it's pretty much the same thing. If I'm eating mostly animal products, it's carnivore to me. And if I have a little bit of fruit here and there or a little bit of veg here and there, whatever, that doesn't affect me, it's the same thing, right?
It's
so tell me about what you're trying to promote now that you're so gung-ho about.
Well, as I said before, I'm an athlete. I love that. And I'm a big believer. And I am one of those people, I guess they call me the food Nazi for a reason. Mm. I'm a big believer and we don't need carbs whatsoever. No carbs, we can function off that properly. And I think Dr. Ben Bickman said it the best way. He said that is one of the macronutrients body does not need to ingest. It can do it on its own, meaning carbohydrates. Yep. And I'm a big believer in that too, but it's hard. I don't know about you, but a lot of my clients tell me, I need carbs, I need carbs, I need carbs. It's not that they need it. It's they want it and they're addicted to it. And so for me, it was to prove, because I work with a lot of athletes, and it was not so much to prove, but I wanted to have the journey and the knowledge and the experience to share with them saying, listen, you don't need it. Cause I just did a 225 mile bike ride with over 14,000 feet in elevation on nothing but meat for over a year. So you can't tell me that your body absolutely needs it. And so, you know, this was a great way to prove that wrong. I know there's studies out there, you know, studies, you know, there's good ones, there's bad ones, whatever. But for me, it's what is applicable and what I've seen and what I've done and what I see in my practice. And so for me, this was huge. And what was even bigger was that I did it on not eating at all during the ride. Cause a lot of the athletes think when you do this, you have to eat.
So you fasted. So how long was that how long of a period of time was that?
So I the first day I broke it up into 2 days. So it was supposed to do 100 one day. It ended up being a little more than 100 on the first day. And I forced myself to eat that morning because I knew that when I work out, I can't eat. I just don't feel well when I do it. So I know I have to do it fasted. Mm-hmm. And so I had been experimenting before this ride where I live in New Hampshire and we have a lot of hills. I've always did it fasting and I was always out there for 5 or 6 hours, didn't eat at all before I went. I'd come home. And 3 or 4 hours later is when I would eat. I wasn't even hungry when I came home. So I decided, well, this I'm going to be out on the road for probably 13 hours, close to 13 hours. I should probably eat. And so the first morning I forced myself to eat and it was not even 4 ounces of steak. I couldn't even eat all what I had made. I was just like, I can't do this. I'm not even hungry. I'm all about eating intuitively. And when your belly grumbles, that's when you should eat. Mm-hmm. So I tried to force myself. So I didn't eat much. And that was at 5:30 in the morning. And then I didn't eat again until 8:30 that night. So I was out there and actually ended up only being 11 hours is what I was out there for. And it was a hot, humid day. It was, you know, almost 90 and it was 80% humidity. It was really hot. So I survived off in electrolytes. That's all I had was water and electrolytes. And it wasn't the electrolytes with like stevia or monk fruit or anything like that. It was just plain old sodium, potassium, and magnesium. Mm. That was it. Nothing else.
Yeah, that's incredible. So were you zero carb on that? Like leading up to it too?
Yeah. So at that day, I was actually just under a full year of having just meat, nothing but meat. I don't do sweeteners. I don't do, so basically it was steak and eggs is what I ate. I don't even do dairy. Hmm. So it was none of that. So it was just different cuts of meat, different from different animals. I don't eat chicken. I don't eat pork. So it's, you know, like anything from lamb, bison, beef, that kind of stuff I will eat. It has to be, for me, has to be farm raised and grass fed.
Right.
So I'm a big believer in it being clean.
Okay. So a couple things here. So you're promoting, I guess the idea that you don't need carbs, right? Which a lot of people will mistake for this idea that you're saying don't eat carbs or carbs are bad. But I think we should clarify that for people because, you know, humans love that black and white. They want, it's either in a box or it's not, right? But what you're doing by showing that you can do that, and we've had a lot of guests. So Michaela Peterson, she eats the lion diets, basically beef and salt. We've had Sina that wrote a book with Joel Salatin. She had to cut out a lot of things because she had autoimmune issues, right? We've had a lot of these people that have a similar story as yours. Some people, like Kevin Stock, for example, he does just meat, like basically beef, nothing else almost. Maybe some eggs or roe. Me, I enjoy food. I've been a foodie my whole life. So I'll have the dairy. I'll have maybe even some gluten-free things here and there. I'm kind of experimenting because I was full-blown carnivore, you know, basically the beginning of the year. And then I've kind of like moved to a flexible, ancestrally-based way of eating, as I'm calling it, right?
That's great.
And so I want people to understand that when you say, when you're showing that you don't need carbs, we're not saying you shouldn't eat carbs.
Right.
Everybody's different. Your genetics, your ancestors, what they did. In fact, there's a lot of studies that like Dr. Ted Neiman, he was on our podcast talking about, he was talking about that the closer you get to the equator of where your ancestors lived, usually those people ate more carbohydrates, right? The further away from the equator, the more northern, I mean, we're talking like almost no carbohydrates, right? And so a lot of us whiter skinned individuals are probably going to do better with more of a meat-based diet. There's so much variation here. We can't make blanket statements, but there is one thing for sure. When you tell yourself, oh, I need carbs. Well, you're right for as long as you tell yourself you need carbs. Of course you need carbs. You literally told yourself you need carbs, right?
Right.
So I think it's a mindset shift that people need. And also in the athletic community, everybody thinks that carbs are essential and this and that. And there's a lot of really bad ideas around calories in, calories out, carbohydrates, whatever. So I get what you're doing. You're almost like protesting / experimenting and showing people, you know, at the same time. Because
Correct.
What would you say to that, to maybe as an addendum to what I just said?
I totally agree with you. Like I believe that we're all individuals, like you said, and I'm a big believer in helping people where they're at. Maybe it's just like you said, maybe it's just a mindset thing and that's something that you need to work on. So I do have to say it took me overnight to become grain-free, sugar-free because I had health issues. My family, on the other hand, it took them a year, maybe two, to get to that point where they are grain-free, but they still have carbs, not grains. So there's different levels of carbs too. And I'm all about nutrient density. So if you are going to eat carbs, let's eat the nutrient dense ones, not the empty ones, like the grains. Yep. So if you're going to do that, stick with, you know, like the sweet potatoes and the, you know, the tubers, that kind of stuff, instead of, you know, eating the rice and the pasta kind
of cassava chips, almond flour tortillas, all those things that, you know, the paleo-ish, like kind of, we think they're kind of real foods, but really they're actually just processed foods. And so, we have those in the household sometimes and, you know, it's very hard to resist. I think the point here with carbs is that we live in a carb-rich environment. Because most processed food, carbs, and obviously seed oils, that's maybe another topic, but this processed food is everywhere. It's in restaurant food. It's in packaged food. It's what lines most of the grocery store shelves. So by saying, okay, we don't need carbs, one, so let's use that as an anchor to like get us as far away from the carb spectrum as possible, right? I feel like that's where this kind of advice is really useful because no matter what, we have to always watch the amount of carbohydrates we're taking in, especially sugar. And then you get into something more like how much energy you're taking in, which Dr. Ted Neiman talks about a lot. He calls it the protein to energy balance. How much protein you're eating, and then how much carbs and fat, which is energy, are you eating, and throttling those two. Usually for everyone, they need more protein and they need less energy, right? And then within the energy spectrum, most people need way less carbs and more fat. So you have these levers, and when you understand them, you can kind of throttle them back and forth. So what does it look like for you when you're working with clients? Take me through somebody who's like, okay, I mean, is it mostly athletes or do you have some overweight clients or is it just a mix? So what if somebody is total newbie, standard American diet? Like, what do you do? Like, run me through that process.
Yeah. So we start off with education, obviously. They got to understand it before they can actually do it. So we do one meal at a time, one item at a time. So I always find that it's harder for people to get rid of carbohydrates instead of sugar. So we usually start with sugar and I always start with their first meal of the day because that is what we start, you know, our day off with. I want it to be on the right foot. And so whatever that first meal of the day is for them, some of them want to eat right when they wake up. Some of them don't even want to eat breakfast and they get shocked when I tell them I have to. They're like, what do you mean I don't have to? I was told that was the most important meal of the day.
Yep.
And I said, it is, but it's
just when not you in the morning.
It. Exactly. So we go through that kind of process and getting them to understand that they don't have to eat. And that's the biggest one too. Eat when you're hungry and when intuitively eating. So a lot of the times when you eat carbs and you eat sugar, you don't have that ability to make ghrelin, which makes your belly grumble. So it's getting the body to doing that again. A lot of the times your body doesn't produce leptin, which is the satiety hormone, and that's due to carbohydrates and as well as sugar. So it's just learning and teaching the body how to do that again. And so we do that one meal at a time, one item at a time.
So one meal, you say, okay, here's the meal you would have eaten. This is what you should eat. Or you're just like, let's scrap that. And here's a list of foods. How do you help them like audit or rebuild that first meal?
So what I do is I do and I don't. So first off, I ask them, what does a typical meal look like for you, your first meal? And then I say, okay, how about we substitute this for this? Give them healthier options. Because usually when you tell them not to eat something, they end up not eating anything at all. And then they just go into this caloric deficit and they don't have the energy to do anything either. They go for major withdrawals, all of that stuff. So I, in the midst of all this, I get them to amp up their fat and their water first. Because sometimes, even though I tell them, let's replace this with this, they still don't. They just take out that item and they don't replace it with something that'll give them energy and make them feel satiated.
Do you think that's because they're in a restricting mindset? Because if they say, I'm going to a coach, I got to be prepared to basically just not eat food. But the reality is a lot of people might even be under eating. Their body's in a, this kind of, maybe even a hypocaloric state or hyper, where they're not, their body isn't responding correctly. You can't get into fat loss mode. Insulin's high, like all these different things. So like, I've seen a lot of people where they actually eat more food, more volume, right? And of course, more nutrient-dense food. And then they lose weight and they're like, wait, what's going on? And of course, I always recommend people throw in intermittent fasting, which just like takes it to another level. But it is surprising that it's so counterintuitive to what people think. Oh, calories in, calories out, right?
Yeah. And I still run into that fat thing too. Like it's still up here in the Northeast.
Yeah, can't eat fat.
Because I'm in New Hampshire. You know, and it's funny, I had this one woman sticks out the most because she, I love sharing her story. And I kept telling her, she wasn't losing weight. She wasn't gaining weight. She was at this plateau. And I kept telling her, add an avocado to every meal, and she just wouldn't do it. And because of the fat fear. Mm-hmm. And so I said to her, so listen, you're not gaining, you're not losing. Do me a favor. Just every day this week, just add an avocado to every meal. She did. And she called me like 3 days later. She goes, I've lost 5 pounds. And I was like, of course she did. Because you were starving your body of the nutrients that it needed. Yep. And so they just don't, a lot, they don't understand that. It's counterintuitive, like you said. So it's just getting people, giving them that knowledge, because there's just so much different information out there that people don't know what to believe anymore. And a lot of it stems from that food pyramid, you know, and that's why, if you remember, I mean, you look kind of young, so maybe you're not as old as I am, but at the bottom of the food pyramid was where all the carbs were. And we built our food and our meals around carbs. Mm-hmm. And that's why I feel it's the hardest for them to get rid of is the carbs.
Yeah. I grew up in I was born in the 80s, so I'm older than I might look, but that's of course, because I eat an especially appropriate animal-based way of eating. And that's why I can look young and I will stay looking young. And so, yeah, I'm always curious when I talk to coaches, like it's really, really hard to get people to lose weight. It's really, really hard to get people to exercise. It's hard to get any human to do something that's not built into their routine already. And the older somebody is, the harder it is, right? Because they're more ingrained with those habits over just years of conditioning. So what are some of those? Maybe they're just anecdotes that you can come up with. Like, I'm always just trying to get like, what are some crazy aha moments or like revelations that you didn't even expect that you learned through teaching a client or like anything that comes to mind to help answer that? Cause I just feel like that's where a lot of the help that people that might listen to our conversation and they get what we're saying, but translating that to everyday life and adjusting habits, that's not an easy proposition.
It definitely isn't. And so what I always come back to is the why. Why are they doing it? What is their underlying reason? Because we forget that why a lot. And I've noticed when I tap into that why, that's one of the first questions I ask them. Why do you want to work with me? What do you want it to look like? You know, and that's why I consider myself a coach as well. Why are they working with me? And what do they want it to look like at the end? To me, that was the aha moment. If we don't focus on that, you lose sight of that, because it's a grind for a lot of people. And it's a lot of work to create new habits. And, you know, because we're just so stuck in our old ways that it takes time. I mean, it took us a long time to get to those bad habits. It's going to take us a long time to get to the good habits too. So that's why I always believe in the small steps first as well, instead of just giving people a list of things that they need to do and a list of things that they need to eat and things to avoid, things to not do. It doesn't work that way. You only have so much willpower, but also food is addicting, and especially carbs and sugar. And there's a lot of, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Joan Eiflin's work. I've been working a lot with her stuff, and it's all about food addiction and what it does to our brain and how neuromarketing, with all of the advertisings and all that, you know, the social media stuff that keeps popping up, that is all about herd mentality, and we want to have what our tribe is having, and they're happy. And so all that neuromarketing plays a big part in our brain too. So when I work with people, I kind of encourage them not to be on social media, not to watch the TV, and listening to the radio, the normal radio. So it's all of that encompassed with the nutrition. It's not just nutrition. So that's also a big aha for me, was a lot of our environment, outside stuff too, not just the stuff that we put into our body or on our body. It's the stuff that's, you know, we're hearing and seeing. Yep. That's huge too.
So what are some of those whys? So like, what are some examples? And do you remind them? Is there like strategies? Is there like a journaling practice? You know, like what's something tactile? Yep.
Yeah. So a lot of the times too is me putting it on them. So one of the things that I love asking is how much percentage wise are you doing what we're talking about? Because a lot of the times it, you know, they like to project on us as coaches, what you're doing for me is not working. But it's really upon them, because we can't want it more than them, and we can't do their pushups for them. Right. So I always ask them, so how much are you putting into action of all the stuff that we're talking? I said, put it in percentage wise, you know, and then that gets them thinking, mm-hmm. Oh boy, maybe it's not her, it's me. And then I said, okay, so when we talked in the beginning, you said you wanted to do this for this reason. And most of it is their parents, they saw what their parents went through, whether it was a heart attack or some kind of Parkinson's or something that really has a huge impact on family. So some kind of an illness or disease, right?
Alzheimer's,
that they claim is hereditary.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's a big one. Weight loss is definitely one. I think as coaches, we always see that stuff. And then, they just all are tired of feeling like crap, or they don't want to take medications every day. You know, those are like the ones that I see a lot of that are not athletes. Those are the ones. And then obviously the athletes are, I want to perform the, I want to be at the top. Right. I want to be,
performance competition.
So that's, yeah, exactly. So those are the big ones. So, and reminding them of that, one of the ones that I recently had was a gentleman, his testosterone levels were low. He's very young. And he's like, I can't perform well in the gym. I can't perform at home and all this stuff. And I was just like, that's hard for a young male. It's hard for a male period, but a young one. And he just kind of lost interest. And then I had to just remind him of it again. And he's like, oh, that's right. So I think life is pretty, the grind of life kind of takes over sometimes and you forget that why. So it's nice to be reminded of that in a nice way. Some people I've worked with for a while, I don't have to be so gentle and nudging that way. I can just say, hey, listen, it's time to get back on track here.
So when somebody says weight loss, do you ask them why again? Because that's not really, weight loss itself is not really a goal. It should be connected to a goal. It's a path towards something else.
And that's where I dig a little more, because I tell them, I said, weight gain is inflammation. So there's something deeper. And that's when we go through their blood work and I have them go through a huge series of everything that they need to get done. Not just your normal CBC. I have them do a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we review all of that. And chances are, because I'm not a doctor, I can't diagnose them, but they are insulin resistant. And I can't say that to them because I'm not a doctor, but I know exactly what we need to do. And that is low carb, sugar, kind of the same things I would do anyway, but it's nice to have the blood work to show them and say, look, this is the problem and this is what we need to fix. And then when we fix all of this internally, then the outside will follow. So we got to heal the inside first.
Yeah. And I pulled up a Nietzsche quote that is one of my favorites. He who has a why to live can bear almost any how. And then there's another book that I recommend everyone read, Start With Why. It's a little bit about business, Simon Sinek, but it's about the best companies have a strong why, whether it's Apple, whether it's Amazon, whatever. And so it's so very true for everything. Like if you're going to do anything and you're going to have to commit to it for the long haul, you better have a why. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to stick with it. And most of the time, it's not that we don't have a why. It's that we're disconnected from the why, or we haven't really gone deep enough to discover it. So I think that's hugely important. I'm curious though, have you had clients that have quit or failed? And what did that look like?
Yeah, they have, because they're just tired of doing the work and they're not ready. And I tell them that from the get-go. Like I almost discourage everyone to work with me, believe it or not.
Stress test.
Yeah, it's a huge commitment. It's a lot of change. Your family has to be on board. Mm-hmm. You have to have support at home. If you don't have support at home, I have group sessions that you can do, because it's important to have that support outside of just me. And you have to be around it all the time. And so that's why I offer group or individual. And I find a lot of times the spouses are not on board. And that's kind of sad, because you really want your spouse to thrive and see them thrive and achieve their goals. But for some reason, we don't see a lot of that. So yeah, I find that helping people, I ask them, I don't force them, because I, like I said earlier, I can't want it more than them. So I say, okay, so where do you want to go from here? I'm giving you all the things that you want to do. How much are you putting into action? Mm-hmm. And if they are not, I said, so why? What is that limiting belief? What's holding you from getting there? And so we dig a lot on the self-limiting beliefs we all have. I don't know if you've ever read the book, The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks, but he talks a lot about that stuff. Even people in Apple have those limiting beliefs, even though they're successful. And we all have that self-doubt, self-bad talk, things that keep us from succeeding. So we dig into that a little bit. If they don't want to dig and they don't want to know the answer, then I just tell them I can't help them and that it's their choice. We can continue doing the education portion of it. And then when they're ready to have the education, or they can come back when they're ready. I'll always be here. So a lot of the times they're just not ready to do that digging. It's scary to know what that is. And sometimes, you know, people just aren't ready to hear that or want to know that just yet. So I do have people that do quit for that reason.
Are there some common complaints or hangups that you run into? Like, what are some of the blocks? I mean, obviously the mental blocks are just unlimited. There's so many of them. We can't really even go into that, right? But a lot of people feel they don't deserve a body or this or that, or they were abused as a child and they never unpacked it. Like, there's so many things that people themselves sabotage themselves. And it's not about a lack of information. It's not about a lack of skill or knowledge or anything. It's quite literally just their inner world they haven't unpacked. But what are some of the really big hurdles? Maybe they're the things that you're able to get clients over, and some just aren't ready to go over them? Or, you know, is it a food thing? Is it like an exercise thing? Is it a cooking at home? What do you find some commonalities for people that really hit up to that wall or that plateau?
Yeah, what I see the most is I am not enough. That's the biggest thing. And so that I am not enough will translate into not doing the prepping, not working out in the morning, not doing that. So it all comes down to I'm not enough, the worthiness. So a lot of the times I sneak it in for them for exercises to do, like, okay, I want you to do some gratitude writing about yourself, not about other people. Like, give me three things every morning that you're grateful for yourself. And doing kind of that kind of stuff does open them up. But it big hurdle is I'm not enough in the worthiness. So what I help them do is there's a lot of exercises that we do for the gratitude writing, or even just being out in nature, getting them to reground, that kind of stuff. Instead of facing the childhood memory, you know, I don't think that's important. Just knowing that you know that it's not, that you're not enough, just knowing that is enough. And that helps us move forward and get over the hurdle. But sometimes people don't want to get over that hurdle because they are more comfortable in that part of the victim. Like, what am I? If I know that I'm worthy, what kind of person, who am I going to be? I lose that identity of enough and I'm not worthy. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people aren't ready to get rid of that because they like that in their life.
Well, yeah, there's the victim mentality, which is an addiction. There's also just the fact that I try to tell people all the time, they ask me like, okay, how do I be successful or self-help or personal development? Basically everything in any of our lives, like the point we're at now is because of our ability to be at this point now. Right. So like for you to go beyond the point that you've been at for a while, and of course, some of us are on a path and we're growing or whatever, but for the most part, we're all going to butt up to like our maximum potential. And it's always, always, always comes down to your brain and how you think and your mindset. Like literally there's nothing else. It's not a lack of opportunity. It's not a lack of intelligence. It's not a lack of skill. It's not a lack of where you're at, where you're living, how much money you have or don't have. It's quite literally only how you think. We rise to basically the lowest level of our awareness and consciousness. And so that's why it's like, that's the hard part though, because everyone wants to just like buy a plan or hire a coach or like study, you know, get it, whatever, and then just get the results. And it's like a lot of times though, for most people, especially if they've struggled with things their whole life, none of that matters. Like if they just got through some of the limiting beliefs, they would get results that they couldn't even fathom in ways they couldn't even imagine. And so the mindset part is just so big, but it's also so frustrating because humans are such psychological creatures, you know, so murky.
And that's part of what my problem was with my health. Was my own view on myself. So that's why I'm able to help my clients the way that I am because of what I had to go through and the mental healing that I had to do. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big reason why I did this big ride too, was because of all the self-limiting beliefs that I've had in the past. And for me, this was like, I know I can do this. I know my body can handle this mental challenge that I was really looking for. And it was an amazing challenge too in that aspect. Mm-hmm. So I know from personal experience that that's what it is. And that's why I'm able to help my clients get through that stuff too. The ones that are willing to do the work, I can't want it more than them, and I can't do it for them. So, yeah.
So that's great. I got a couple rapid fire questions here that we're going to go through, and then we'll wrap up, and we'll do the links and everything of where people can find you. Okay. Perfect. So the first thing we're going to do is what is a life-changing purchase under $100? Anything that's been recent or just like anything that comes to mind, something that's really impactful. Could be for health or could be just for anything really. It's got to be impactful. $100? 100 or less. It could be a little bit more than 100, but in that range.
I would have to say the book I Am Enough by Marissa Peer. That was very impactful. Absolutely.
All right. I'm going to write that down. I Am Enough. Books are always good. I'm glad when people say that.
Yeah, I love that.
What is your favorite Instagram account under 25,000 followers?
Oh, that would be the Primal Blueprint. I think they're under 25,000.
Yep. I met Mark Sisson at PaleoFX first year we were in business. That was like,
isn't he awesome?
That was a dream. That was awesome. Yeah. Okay. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be? What would you put on that billboard?
Less is more.
Less is more. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that then? Like, what do you mean by that?
So I find I do a lot of the Maffetone training. So I do a lot of maximize aerobic function work, and that has always gotten me to get faster. I've been doing that for the past 3 years. So what it does is it just decreases the inflammatory response that you get from extreme working out. And it also maximizes your fat burning abilities. So it helps when you are doing these long endurances to burn fat instead of sugar.
And so when you say less is more though, how does that apply to that? What do you mean by that?
So you work out less. So a lot of the athletes think you got to work out hard. You got to work out every
intense.
Day.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's less is more.
Totally. So favorite cut of meat and how do you prepare it?
Oh, that would be my ribeye. And I love it cooking it in tallow with a lot of salt on it. And then I just kind of sear it in a cast iron pan.
That's how I break my fast every day. It's usually ribeye or strip.
Awesome.
Yep.
Yay.
It's the simplest technique.
Yes, it is.
What is something that I didn't ask that I should have?
I think for me, the question would have been about like, what am I most passionate about? And I would have to say inflammation. And a lot of people don't realize what that is. So for me, it's all about anything that you feel from headaches all the way up to any kind of disease, that's inflammation. And so anything that we are labeled as that we're going to have forever or we don't have control of, we actually do through nutrition. And so, you know, I don't treat anybody any different that has a headache versus cancer. We just remove the inflammatory issues. And when we do that, the body has the amazing ability to heal. So it's all about removing inflammation.
So what are five tips for non-nutrition related tips for reducing inflammation?
So non-nutrition. So that I would definitely, I guess I could say water is
drinking more water.
Nutrition, right? So drinking water, definitely. Sleep is another huge one. Make sure you do some mindful practice, whatever that is for you. If it's a walking out in nature, go out and do it. Mm-hmm. Making sure you set time aside for yourself, just for you, outside of anybody else, and quiet so you can feel your feelings and understand what's going on inside of you. Because we have so much going on outside of us. And then the other thing is to make time with what makes you happy. Is that your family? Is that a special friend? But always making time each week to do that too.
Yeah. And I would also say that part of that solitude time or that going out in nature time or whatever is turning your damn devices off.
Yes. Thank
just
you.
Get off thank your phone, you. Get off, like turn your ringer off, your notifications. Yes. And just a side note, if you're an adult, this is just my blanket advice for everybody. If you're an adult in 2020, and you still have your phone that pings you and dings you and pop-ups show up or whatever, it's destroying your brain. You need to turn them all off. Check your phone when you want, a couple times a day. I keep my phone airplane mode most of the day, and I'm just so happy when I take it off. I'm happy when I have no notifications. I don't want anybody to contact me, right?
That's great. I love that.
Since I changed my number, I haven't given my number out to many people, like only close friends and family, so.
I'm going to take that idea. Thank you. I'm going to change my number too.
Yeah. Okay. It's been a pleasure. And where can people find you?
They can find me on all social media platforms as well as my website. So that is K8 for wellness. It's the letter K, the number 8, the number 4, wellness. And that is LinkedIn and that is Facebook and it's also Instagram. So that's where they can find me. And my website is obviously.com.
Okay, great. Well, Kate, we'll have links to everything in the show notes. It was a pleasure having you on. And keep doing what you're doing. Colin. It matters.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Of course.
Please always remember that the members of the Ancestral Mind podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.
Hey, everybody. Colin here. Thanks for listening to that show. I want to let you know about my newest podcast over at Escaping Fragility, a show about building a life for yourself, being safe, being secure, having a plan B, so that if this crazy world of 2020 continues or gets worse, which a lot of the numbers are suggesting it will, then you and your family will be protected. A lot of my content for my personal brand has been focused on giving people the knowledge, the expertise, the skills, and just the awareness of some of the craziness that's going on so that they can protect themselves, so that they can fight back, so that they can be civilly disobedient, so that we can stymie the ever-encroaching spread of government and of corporate and political agenda. If more citizens do not stand up, fight back, speak up, there's going to be nothing left to protect. And I don't like fear-mongering, and I'm generally an optimistic person, but 2020 has stressed me out. At first it didn't, but then it did. When I really saw what was going on, when I read a little bit between the lines, and even now, the craziness is continuing, and I don't see it letting up anytime soon. The masses are too easily manipulated. And so I'm more concerned what's going to happen in 2021 when the next flu season comes through and another coronavirus is weaponized, and then who knows what's going to happen? Travel restrictions, mandatory vaccines, chipped and prodded like cattle. People think it can't happen. They stick their head down, but they did in Mao's China. They did in Stalin's Russia. They did in Nazi Germany. And then it was too late. And who pays the price? It's always, always, always the citizens that are having faith and that are just hoping things get better. They're the ones that always pay the price. So the first thing we can do is protect ourselves and our family, have a plan B, have an escape option, and then we can help others. Head over to Colin.coach, get on the AM5 newsletter. You'll get all the shows every week. And you can also find me on YouTube and iTunes or Spotify or Google Play. Get prepared before it's too late.